Welcome. This is episode 6 of your MedMal podcast, Discovering the Needle. Nurse consultants help you discover what you didn't know that you didn't know about how to win your medical malpractice case. In this podcast, we look at anonymized, true examples of how a behind-the-scenes, non-testifying nurse consultant was able to quickly locate, isolate, and articulate the core issues in common and not so common medical malpractice scenarios, using his or her nursing expertise to save the firm upfront costs, resulting in higher profits and higher compensation to your deserving client. If you're new to our podcast, welcome. You can learn more about how behind-the-scenes legal nurse consulting can improve your firm's win rates and profitability by following us on LinkedIn or visiting our website at www.nplegalconsultants.com. By following our weekly podcast, you can use your commute to sharpen your own standard of care issue spotting and causation narrative skills. Grow your virtual Rolodex of top nurse consultants of all specialties and discover the MedMal plaintiff attorney's secret weapon for slaying the medical corporate giant. It's time to discover the nurse consultant advantage. Let's get started.
Today, we are speaking with Tara Zarchuk-Marciano. Tara began as a CNA 25 years ago, and she became an LPN and then an RN, working med-surg, and ultimately chose surgery as her career about 14 years ago. Then she went on to get her master's and then her PhD in nursing education. She has worked as the lead surgical services nurse educator at her facility, and now she works as a legal nurse consultant.
Tara may be reached on her website at tzmlegalnurseconsultant.com.
Tara came today to talk about a case of orofacial maxillosurgery. Tell us a little bit about what happened.
One of my attorney clients I've been working with had contacted me. It was a paper case. It was not electronic, so I got records FedEx to me.
The old-fashioned way.
And they were not in order in any rhyme or reason. So I had to go through and put everything back in place. And then I found that there were a bunch of handwritten medical notes.
Yeah, doctor's handwriting, right? That's something we definitely have experience with as nurses, though.
Yes, very much. Yes.
It helps to know what the word pool is that you're working with, right? If you don't know the medical language, how can you read a doctor's handwriting? Because they're writing a word that you don't know. In order to be able to go look up the word, you have to know what the word is and how it's spelled. But when the letters run together, you don't even know what to go look up. As somebody who doesn't understand medical terminology as well, when you're looking at a word that's just scribbles, you have to pick apart which letter's which, and then it could be a word you've never heard of before. And then you have to go look that up. But if you don't know how to decipher what's being said, how can you even know what to look up?
That's where to start.
Yeah. So you must have been incredibly helpful to the attorney in breaking that down specifically.
So this was a patient in her 60s, and she went in to have teeth extracted by an oral surgeon for placement of a denture plate. And it was just the upper teeth. She went in, had the procedure. Procedure went well, no issues. Standard of cares were meant for post-op care. And then pretty soon after the extraction, started to develop pain in a teeth number 9 through 11 and up the nasal labial folds. She was having pain and swelling, and it continued for months. Eventually, they referred her back to the oral surgeon. She proceeded to get sicker, but it wasn't really documented until she got to the point where she ended up in an emergency room, ended up with an ENT. It went from nothing to 100 over a course of less than a month.
Wow. What was the ultimate fallout as far as the damages go ultimately?
She ended up having to have a left maxillectomy done, partial removal of the maxillary bones. And usually they'll do another flap in there. And then on top of that, she ended up developing nasal issues, a fistula, basically a canal, a hole that goes from the nasal cavity to the opening of your mouth. But she ended up having to have a septoplasty done.
So that can affect things like swallowing and things like that can be problematic.
Very problematic, yes. And then you'd have drainage too. You'd have mucus draining from the sinus into the mouth as well.
Was there some smoking guns among those handwritten notes?
I would say more the lack of what was not in those handwritten notes. That was a big smoking gun. I was telling my attorney that documentation is lacking. That was a huge thing that we've noted. There was no subjective data. There was no physical assessment data written down. It was just really lacking. And even the follow note from the beginning of the case, there was no documentation. There was no subjective, objective. There was no information at all to even document for the first post-op visit. So I was very surprised by that. When you're thinking of outpatient, making sure to document all of their subjective complaint and then going through that objective and doing a physical exam and documenting all of your assessment findings and then documenting interventions and evaluating before you're getting these patients ready to go home, because you're not going to see them. You're seeing these doctors or dentists, in this case, are seeing them for half hour at the most, and then they're sending them on their way. And they really need to be documenting exactly what's going on and what their interventions, what their treatments are for these patients and what the evaluations are. SOAP is very much the most common format that we do see. With outpatient and documentation point of views, they're looking for those diagnoses also. That's really going to be how they're driving everything, their assessments, their interventions, their treatments. So it's really important that they do have a diagnosis somewhere in there.
And I also think focused assessments are important too, because if you're seeing an outpatient for their cholesterol, you're not going to do a focused assessment of their mouth. That's not relevant in that situation. But if they're coming with complaints of pain in their mouth following a procedure, then they're going to have a full-on focused assessment of the mouth, which is going to include negative findings.
Focused assessments are very important, especially in this case. It was a specific area that this patient was having problems with. It would be identified in a few of the notes. It was subjectively being complained of, but the dentist was not doing a focused assessment. And then when they did do a focused assessment, it was a very brief physical exam documentation findings. It was noted that, oh yes, tooth number 11 has a sore spot, but then they didn't go into any details. So the focus assessment wasn't there really detailing what they saw
or what they didn't see. Sometimes it's just as important to document no swelling and no drainage as it is to say swelling and drainage, especially from a legal standpoint. If they don't document either no swelling, no drainage, or swelling and drainage, then there's no leg to stand on from a legal perspective. It may have been draining. It may have been swollen. You didn't say it wasn't. That's something that if you're reading the chart as an attorney or paralegal that doesn't have the background understanding of what does a focused exam look like, what are they looking for, then you wouldn't notice that they left out a pertinent negative finding.
Correct. And that is a huge issue because going forward, we don't know what happened. Where is this going from? This patient had been complaining of mouth pain for months, and there was no documentation of this anywhere. So all of a sudden, it showed up 6 months later after the initial surgery back at the initial oral surgeon, and it was complaint of pain for 3 weeks. But from what the client was saying, it was months of complaint of pain, but we could not find it documented anywhere. So that standard of care, the pain assessment and the documentation of pain was completely missed on so many occasions for months upon months. Maybe things could have been a little bit different of an outcome, but wasn't even addressed.
The nature of nursing and nurses are that we get into this industry because we want to help other people. We want to provide care for other people. And so we're usually the last people to hold ourselves out as experts, even when we've had as much experience as Tara's had. So most of us are not born marketers. We don't feel like we want to put a sign out and say, look what I can do for you and how I can help you, because it's not about us. It's never been about us. You observed that, or have you felt that yourself?
Yes, I have. Yes. I went to a networking event and I got there and I didn't know what to do. How do you network? How do you do that without trying to sell yourself? What I found was a lot of education needs to be done. I was offering them an education into what nurses can do for them. What do you do? Oh, a nurse expert. And I was like, that's one thing you can do. But behind the scenes, we offer a whole array of expertise. They were very shocked by that. It was a whole eye-opening experience for them to see, wow, you really can do something different than that.
Yeah, it's true. It never ceases to amaze me how it still is, depending on the attorney, a novel idea to have a consultant behind the scenes that is not a testifying expert helping you on your case. Nurses are a lot more comfortable with the word consultant than they are with the word expert. The legal industry, at whatever point they decided to call testifying individuals experts, insofar as nursing goes, the legal industry shot themselves in the foot, because nurses, just by nature, and I'm being stereotypical, but nurses by nature tend to be white personality, I guess, trying to help other people and defray attention off of themselves. Most of us consider ourselves lifelong learners. And if you're a learner, you can't also be an expert, which is simply not true. That's just a belief that a lot of nurses hold. Oh no, I'm not an expert. But what they don't realize is that in the legal world, to qualify to be an expert, all it takes is to be someone who is reasonable and prudent with the same or similar background as the defendant, essentially.
Coming from the operating room, we would have mock depositions and we would have lawyers come in to show what they're looking for when you are a nurse in the operating room and what's going to be questioned. And they talk about documentation. So to think about being an expert after you have sat through a few of those educational experiences with the lawyers, you're like, yeah, I don't know if I really want to go down that. That was scary having that experience, not understanding that it only takes 3 questions to get to what they're looking for. As the nurse coming into the legal field, I think it's, wow, how can I be an expert? I know I've been a nurse there for 14 years, but how can I be someone who gets on the stand and testifies under oath? That was a big eye-opening experience for most of us OR nurses.
That's definitely true. But even the words like deposition and testify and testimony and under oath, those kind of things can be really intimidating. And I think that for most of us, because we are medical providers, our thoughts go to our fears about being sued at one point in time.
Yes.
That's kind of where our mind goes. I think that we forget that you don't have to be the person in the world that knows the most about this thing. It's just that you're the person in this room that knows the most about this thing. And the room typically includes lay people, jury, and a semi-Fowler's lawyer and judge. For those of you who don't know what semi-Fowler's mean, it's a medical term for lying in a 30-degree angle in a hospital bed.
Along the lines of being that patient advocate, as a nurse, we are patient advocates in the hospital. That's our main goal, is being the patient advocate. And as the expert witness, after you get past your nerves and being on the stand in the whole legal process, that's where you can really shine as being a patient advocate, more so than ever before. That's something that nurses do without even thinking about.
How much easier do you think it would be to accept an offer to be a testifying expert if you'd been approached as, would you be willing to be a patient advocate and educator to our jury?
You would have so many more nurses that would be more accepting and willing, because that's our nature. Our nature is to advocate and educate.
I think it would be an interesting social experiment to reach out and ask 100 nurses, would you be willing to be a patient advocate and educator to a jury in a trial? And see how many of those would say yes, as opposed to, would you be willing to be a testifying expert in trial? Same exact thing. But you switch up those words a little bit. And so if you're an attorney looking to engage a nurse, you might try to invite that nurse, especially if they've never testified before and it's a whole new world for them, but they're the perfect testifying expert because their credentials and their background align, and maybe they're in the right locality. If you're looking for a testifying expert RN, approach them by inviting them to be an advocate and educator is one way to get your foot in the door, and then explain to them that yes, it does involve testimony.
Before I came into the legal field, all my experiences I had been involved in when we would have cause analysis or an incident that would happen in the OR and we would have to do RCAs about it. Like when an incident happens.
Internal investigation.
Yes. So it would identify what happened. How did the incident happen? How are we going to fix this? What's the education going to be? And then was it completed? What was the outcome of it? When I started to market, I was offering a very fair value for my education and expertise. And I had a few of the attorneys who I contacted kind of like, I can have my paralegal do it for a lot less than that. I said, yes, for copy and paste. They said, but when you come down to the details and you're looking at those records, that's what you're paying me for. That's the difference. I'm going to pick up that one word that's going to make a difference in your case where your paralegal would not pick that up. That was a huge selling point for some of the attorneys. It took that burden off of them of having to go through 5,000 medical records and not knowing what to look at. This is what we do our whole careers. Besides taking care of our patients, our documentation is very valuable and we are always trying to put the pieces together. We are bringing such a value to your team, this expertise that the legal field doesn't have yet.
Yeah, it really is a paradigm shift. You have to step out of the paradigm of buying time and realize that you're buying value. You're buying an increased chance of a win and an increased chance of a higher settlement or a higher verdict. And what is that worth to you? It's not about trading the nurse's time for money. And what can that nurse earn for an hour of her time in the hospital? Why should I pay her more than that? It really isn't about that. It's about whether what this nurse can find that your paralegal would miss, whether that gap will make the difference in whether you do win or not. There's something to be said about the efficiency of that time. Because if you have 10,000 pages of records, and if you spend on average 10 seconds looking at each page, we could crunch that out, and that's several hours of time. But if the paralegal spends 40 seconds on each page because they really have to get their bearings and figure out, is this page important? I need to be sure that this page is not important. As a nurse, you can look at that page and in an instant know that it's not important because you know what that is and what it's talking about and what it's not talking about. As a nurse, you and I can look at a set of lab values, for example, and we see all the H's and the L's. Just because something is an H or an L doesn't mean it's important. And just because something is not an H or L doesn't mean that's not important.
Yes, and I agree. And you're looking at lab values. It's very pertinent that you have someone who can say that's really important. Yes, it's a little high. Yes, it's higher on the normal side, but it's not something that we're overly aware of, especially if you have someone who's healthy with no comorbidities or immunocompromised, or it could be at a baseline, but it's at the higher end. What does it mean if it's at the higher end? Or what does it mean if it's at the lower end? That might be really important as well, just because it's not outside the norm yet. So sometimes those labs don't always correlate to what's going on either.
This clinical judgment that allows us to look at the entirety of the clinical picture and make an analysis on that. It's not something that you can teach overnight. It's not something that someone who has frankly not been in that clinical career and has not literally been in the trenches in the hospital setting can do, really. It's not something inborn. It is something that is learned over decades.
Yes, like that critical thinking and clinical reasoning that we as nurses develop over the many years of the basics of doing your assessments, of doing your interventions, of doing the reevaluations of those patients. Those are those skills we say as nurses, we get that gut feeling. As you're reading through medical records and you're putting the picture together as nurses, we can start to get that gut feeling of what was going on and where things were not identified, where things were missed, where did that standard of care deviate. As a layperson looking at it without that clinical reasoning, the critical thinking or the clinical judgment, you're going to miss those pieces and you're not going to be able to put that full picture together.
What I've noticed when I review a case, what happens cognitively is I'll find something like a lab or an exam finding, and that will actually trigger a question in my head. And then I know intuitively where to go to find the answer to this new question because I know the medical record and I know where I would look to find that answer. You have to be able to know enough to have those questions be triggered to know to go look in that next place. And so it's really like a treasure hunt, like an Easter egg hunt where you're going to the next place and the next place and the next place. But if you don't understand the pathophysiology about what's going on in the human body enough to get your own mind to cognitively generate additional questions, then it won't take you down any path. You're just going to be writing down events rather than searching for events. It's a totally different paradigm and perspective and approach to reviewing medical records.
Yes, it is. And now you're really looking at putting all those pieces together and identifying where those major pieces are that either have been missed or are not being identified.
You've been listening to Discovering the Needle. Nurse consultants help you discover what you didn't know that you didn't know about how to win your medical malpractice case. This podcast is a production of Discovery NP Legal Consultants. Discovery is the largest unified growing force of specialty nurse practitioners offering consulting services to medical malpractice attorneys who take cases for the plaintiff.
Nationwide nurse practitioner consultants to the legal profession, or NPCLPs, at Discovery NP Legal Consultants include specialists in orthopedics and first assists in spinal and other surgeries, as well as a host of other specialties.
To request a consultation or to be featured as a legal nurse consultant on our podcast, you may reach us on our website at www.nplegalconsultants.com or by calling 208-779-1990. That's 208-779-1990.